Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, it is our fall TV preview, where we discuss the TV shows we are most excited for from now until the end of the year. And at the end of the show, we'll also review Kate, Small Engine Repair, and James Wan's insane new horror flick, Malignant. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow hosts, John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron. How you doing tonight?
Wonderful. Troy Heinrichs.
I am a Teletubby.
What?
Are you Pinky Winky or
what the hell kind of intro is that?
Well, I mean, I'm a little, you know, got some weight on me because I'm going to be watching so much TV this fall.
I feel like that was the largest stretch to get whatever you were trying to get to. Yeah. I mean, and by the way, we took a poll. Nobody agreed with Troy last week. Nobody on the entire planet agreed with Troy. Roy Kent is a supporting player. Ted Lasso's the lead. That's just the way it is. Oh, John, you weren't here. We didn't get your opinion, but you know it's
well,
true.
The show is called Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
I hate you, John.
I'm sorry,
and
buddy.
And your little dog, too.
I'd really like to have your back on this, but the show is called Ted Lasso.
Hey, let's get excited because 33 years ago, there was a fantastic film called Twins, and it's finally getting a sequel called Triplets with Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Ivan Reitman's going to direct, and Tracy Morgan is joining the threesome. So
what?
That happened. Yeah, right before we started recording, I just had to mention it. Who doesn't want to mention that?
I mean, it has like the potential to be really, really funny, but at the same time, it's like 30 years too late.
I'm going to agree with the 30 years too late bit, but also, was the first movie even that funny? Like, if we sit there and watch it, would we still laugh today?
I mean, I feel like, maybe.
Because the ladies helped out. It wasn't just Schwarzenegger and DeVito.
There were ladies in that?
Yeah, it was.
I don't recall. I guess it wasn't that good because I don't remember the movie at all. I just remember the poster. Maybe that's the problem. I only remember the poster.
It was Kelly Preston was in that one.
Was she? I don't. I want to say that you're wrong.
If she is, she won't be in the new one.
Why not?
She's dead.
What?
Like Norm MacDonald. Yeah, she's dead.
When did that? Oh, wow.
Sorry, buddy. I'm not trying to be dour, but I'm just letting you know. You didn't know the Kelly Preston passed away?
You know, maybe I did know, but it's been a hell of a year.
Fair enough.
And the survey says that I may be wrong about Roy Kent, but I am not wrong about Kelly Preston being in Twins.
I'll give you Kelly Preston. You get to have that.
Yeah, I'm so proud of you. You have IMDb.
Actually, I didn't even go that far. I just went to Google.
You know, that was originally Eddie Murphy was supposed to be like that third twin and triplet, whatever, and that didn't work out, I guess, so now it's Tracy Morgan, so we'll see. I don't know, maybe they'll have a lot of, it's like Grumpy Old Men jokes.
That's gonna be terrible.
What's more terrible, Norm MacDonald passed away.
That is pretty terrible.
That is a damn tragedy.
He was very underappreciated as a comic, I think.
Look at all these hookers in these cars.
Did you ever see him? Because he's like a fantastic talk show guest. And I'll never forget when he was on Conan O'Brien next to Courtney Thorne Smith. Do you remember this? And she was talking about she was going to be in a Carrot Top movie. And he just kept railing how humiliating that was. And he's like, oh, I know what the movie's going to be. She didn't know what the title was at the at that second. And then he goes, I know what it's called. Box Office Poison. And and then later she goes, it is. It's called Chairman of the Board. And then Norm jumped right back in. That's spelled B-O-R-E-D.
That's pretty great.
Brilliant guy.
I think Dirty Work is a little underappreciated for a movie.
I like that movie.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I really, really like that movie. I do. More people should appreciate it. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, Amanda's not here this week. I didn't say that.
They probably figured when you didn't hear, hello, hello.
Well, no, they did. So now they might be confused.
Or it's either that or they didn't hear, who's Norm MacDonald?
Ouch.
Oh, my God.
I was so sad to hear he passed. What did he do again? Because I'm going to try to play it off like he would actually, I know what he did.
And Troy's got some super old news. He just won't let it go. So what is this you want to mention to people?
Well, there was a service called Locast, which since we're doing the fall TV preview, this is how almost 50 markets across the United States were getting their local channels. The way it worked was basically they set themselves up as a non-for-profit organization, And if you donated $5 a month, then you got to see your local channels on your streaming devices, plus your phones and tablets. So for those people that couldn't put up an antenna in their area and get it over the air, this was an antenna substitute, if you will. There was a company back in 2014 called Aereo that attempted to do this. The difference was that Aereo was a for-profit company, and the Supreme Court shut them down back in 2014. Yeah, Locast was basically a way to put an antenna up in the area and then get your local channels for $5 a month. So you didn't have to pay your $5 to Comcast and your regional sports fees and your sales tax and your box rental and all this other stuff, where it basically became like $25 a month to get it from your cable company. This was a cheaper version of that. The only difference being is that they tried to use the law to say, because your information is basically allowed to come to you free over the air, Locast was basically doing free over the air and then streaming it over the internet. And so the big four obviously got together and said, screw you, Locast, you're retransmitting. And based on the retransmission law, therefore, you owe us a bunch of money. And Locast said, no, we don't, because we're nonprofit.
So they're out.
So basically, the ruling of the court said, you got to shut down.
Hmm. Are you trying to say that they tried to fight the law, but the law won?
Yes. And of course, this happened like 2 weeks before the football season started. So great timing by the big four networks.
So you're mad because this affects you. That's what I'm hearing.
Yes, it was my way to watch my local channels. So I can no longer watch The Blacklist. I can no longer watch football. I'm really bummed.
50% of that problem isn't so bad.
That's some shade, man.
Sorry. Had to say it.
Not sorry.
One more thing I want to mention before we go on, now that you know the Locast news. Disney did commit, because Shang-Chi was such a huge hit, you know, 2 weekends, massive hit, that they're going to commit to theatrical exclusive releases for the rest of the year. What? So, boom. There you go.
For how many days did they say, like, if it was a 45-day or 30-day?
45 days, except for one animated film, is 30 days. So it's at minimum 30 days, 45 for almost everything else.
And then is it going to go to be like the Disney premiere, so you have to pay $30 if you want to get it for the next 60 days?
They didn't specify that.
That would be smart if they did, though, because some people would still go for that.
They sure would.
Sure, sure. And then everybody wins. I'm fine with that. Everybody
and
wins.
And then it's free to stream after 90 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Probably.
You know, Disney just, you know, what happened is they looked very carefully at the scientific data and said, they like money more. So that's what they want. That's how it works.
Boom.
Science is amazing.
They use the maths.
All right. Are you guys ready to talk about our fall TV preview? We're going to talk about all our most anticipated TV shows, which it's ridiculous how many new shows are still coming out this year when you'd think we had run out of concepts, premises, actors. Like, who were the actors coming from for all these roles? All these bit parts and everything and everything? I feel like I'm going to start seeing the same actor pop up in 5 shows in 1 week.
Yeah, well, that sounds like about right.
I wonder how many of these shows, though, were holdovers from the COVID years. So that way, it's like they were in the can, or they were almost done being filmed, and they finished filming. So now we have like this plethora of stock.
I think almost all of these are fresh. Almost all of these are fresh. They didn't start filming till this year.
Wow.
Yeah, because last year's wasn't that really affected everything. This year, it's all new content.
Well, I stopped counting when there were 500 scripted new shows in a year. After that point, I was like, there's just too many. I give up.
We're still at that number, man. We're more, probably getting closer to 600.
Yeah.
I get to 20 and I'm like, I'm breaking out in the sweats.
20 total? Like, not even 20 that you're watching, just 20 you see in the schedule. You're like, nope.
Nope.
Books.
The title of the article was 51 new shows coming this fall, and John didn't even click on it.
Nope. That's an awful lot of reading that I'd have to do. And I, you know, we all know how I feel about reading.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Well, let's get into it. These are the most anticipated new shows debuting from now until the end of the year from us. And we'll mention some listener picks when we get done. And any honorable mentions are welcome in the new shows. Then we'll talk a little bit about returning shows too. But let's start with, I've got 2 Jeremy Renners. So I'm going to start with the one most people don't know about, Mayor of Kingstown. And that's going to be a Paramount Plus show from Tyler Sheridan that debuts in November. I think it's November 12th, like right before Hawkeye, which I'll talk about Hawkeye in a minute. It follows the powerful McCluskey family in a small Michigan town that survives off the business of incarceration. They're profiting off of prisons. And it stars Jeremy Renner, Diane Wiest, and Kyle Chandler. Friday Night Lights fans, rejoice. So if you don't know
That's
who Taylor...
It's a powerful cast.
It is.
Pretty
it's good. Great. And if you don't know who Taylor Sheridan is, Yellowstone. He's the guy that did Yellowstone.
I got nothing for you.
You should be excited. That's what you should have for me.
Oh, excitement. I'm sorry. Woo! Kevin Costner! Yeah!
No, that's... He's not in this one. That's yeah, Jeremy Renner. Grumpy Cat's in this one.
Okay. Milquetoast the Grumpy Cat?
Yeah, I think that's an upgrade, right? You don't like Kevin Costner?
He's fine. He's kind of milquetoasty, though.
I mean, he...
I almost watched Draft Day the other night, just because I was scrolling through it. I was like, oh, I'll watch Draft Day.
That's a good movie.
It is a good movie.
I don't know anyone that doesn't really like Costner, so that's...
Yeah. I didn't say I didn't like him. I just said that sometimes he's very forgettable, except unless he tells his superpowered son to not save his life.
Let's talk about that for 20 minutes. What were you thinking? That was so stupid. What a dumb choice.
He can move so fast you can't see him. Yeah.
I don't want you. Wait, just stop. Wait, Dad, I could be there and back before they even know I'm gone. No, just wait. Take care of your mom. What he was really saying that whole scene was, I want out of this marriage so bad. Ultimately. All right, John, what's your first one you want to throw out there?
All right, so my first one's actually already out on FX and Hulu. It's dropped the first three episodes. It's Why the Last Man. This is based off a graphic novel that adapts from that. What would happen if all the men in the world died except for one dude? And so far, after what I've been watching on the series, I like it a lot. I gotta say that it's pretty much exactly what I expected when there aren't people around to open pickle jars and to mow the lawn and stuff, the world goes to shit.
Oh my God.
That's our John at the Hollywood Outsider.
No, it's just John at the HollywoodOutsider.com. But
yeah, I don't even check that.
He's probably not going to read it. I watched that. It was interesting. I didn't know what the concept was. I just knew, well, why? So it's got to be Y chromosome, last man. Okay. So he's the last man on the planet. Didn't realize all women lived and female animals too. So all the male animals die. And so this guy, I mean, he's a very capable actor. It looks like an engaging role. And all I kept thinking was, this seems like the best gig in town. If I'm him, that doesn't seem so awful, right? That doesn't seem like something I'd be so sad about. Because officially, if somebody says, I wouldn't date you if you were the last man on Earth, they're lying. Because they probably would. Because you literally are. Your odds are astronomically improved.
I get kind of tense when it's just one woman who's expecting me to do way too much way more than I'm capable of doing. So when it's a whole planet full of women who expect that, that's bad.
I would tour the world like Kane and Kung Fu.
See, I'm more nervous about the series because Brian K. Vaughan's comic book was the impetus for this, and Brian K. Vaughan's the executive producer. And last time Brian K. Vaughan did Under the Dome, he bolted at the end of the first season. So I'm curious to see if he's going to stick all the way through or if he's got like full control of this thing, because that'd be my biggest concern right now is just, is this going to follow the graphic novel or are they going to be able to keep it going for many seasons?
I never checked out the graphic novel, but I had a few friends who loved the graphic novel and a few friends who liked the graphic novel. However, they found some of the characters problematic in today's world. So I need to check back in. I want to check back in with them to see how they feel about if they change the characters enough to handle how people have grown in the way they see some of this stuff. So
makes sense. All right. Well, then over on Apple TV Plus, September 24th, Foundation starts. This one is huge. So if you don't have an Apple TV Plus subscription, now would be the time to grab one. Isaac Asimov's iconic series of books about brilliant mathematician Hari Seldon is devising a 1,000-year plan to deal with the impending end of a future galactic empire. It gets the prestige TV treatment with a series starring Mad Men alum Jared Harris as Hari and adapted by sci-fi veterans David S. Goyer from The Dark Knight and Josh Friedman from War of the Worlds. So make sure you check that out because it's going to be fan-freaking-tastic.
Are you someone who read those books?
I did not read I read the initial book.
Because it feels like something really up your alley. Like, I watched the trailer and I just checked all the boxes I know Troy likes.
I mean, this is a property that's been in the works for quite some time for someone to actually make it. So the fact that Apple's throwing the amount of money they are at this to make it happen, I think it's going to be really something spectacular, because it's almost like everybody's been talking about Dune and the giant worms and how great the worms look in the Dune movie. Mm-hmm. This is going to be kind of like that level of, like, if there was anybody that's a true book person, I think you're going to see a lot of these worlds and the realization of some of these places come to life pretty quickly. Plus, it's Jared Harris. So, I mean,
He's very good. That, I'm telling you, if you go watch the trailer, it's one of those trailers that is so good, it almost makes you want to subscribe to Apple instead of using someone else's password.
It's also one of those trailers that you go, oh man, that's sci-fi geeky, I'm out. So it's that same problem Dune's going to have.
Yeah, it's kind of Westworldy in that way, right?
Yeah, totally.
I want to check that out. Well, Hawkeye comes to Disney Plus Wednesdays starting November 24th. And that's Jeremy Renner's sharpshooting Avenger. He becomes a mentor to Kate Bishop, who's equally as talented, I assume, as in terms of an archer. It's played by Hailee Steinfeld. And if you did see Black Widow, you saw that there was a hint that one of the characters from Black Widow should be popping up in here at some point. We didn't see her in any kind of trailer, but it did throw out like a complete Christmas vibe if you haven't seen the new trailer that just came out.
Oh, such a great vibe.
I mean, killing people around Christmas, it's kind of my favorite thing. Die Hard is a Christmas
movie. Yeah, well, I was going to say Die Hard or Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, is that like a reboot coming up for him?
I think so. But it's great. It's like Jeremy Renner has barely been around for the last couple of years. Now I know why. He's been making these shows. He's got two shows that are going to be airing at the same time. I think that's kind of fantastic. That's where we are with TV. We have so much content. A lead actor can be in two shows at once.
That goes back to what you were saying about, are we going to start seeing the same people and everything?
I was going
to
say, I feel like we just went into a time warp or something.
Yeah.
Let's do the time warp again.
I see what kind of night we're going to have. All right. So my next show is Midnight Mass. It's September 24th on Netflix. This is Mike Flanagan. If you don't know who he is, he's Haunting of Hill House. He's every cool supernatural thriller that you can find on Netflix. That's Mike Flanagan. I'm really excited about it. One of the reasons why I'm excited about it is actually he's added to the cast Hamish Linkletter. It looks like he's playing a priest in this one. And like, he's really great. Now, I watched him in Tell Me All Your Secrets, which is on Amazon Prime. It had so much potential because the cast of that show was pretty strong and powerful. And, you know, you really felt for him. But the story was... Somebody needed to check in on that story, but Hamish Linkletter on that show was amazing. So I'm really hoping to see some really great creepy priest vibes out of him. I can't believe I just strung that sentence together, but okay.
Most things that revolve around priests get a little creepy, is what I hear. Sorry.
Well, I mean, it is a story about a village on an island. So I'm all about stories about people on islands.
Jesus Christ. Really? You can find every way. Sorry, Jesus. Sorry. You find every way you can to bring it back to Lost? Really?
Well, you just better hope.
He meant Alcatraz.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about Alcatraz.
Now, legitimate question, John, because I know you loved Hill House, which I did too, and you loved Bly Manor, which I did not.
Right.
Are you more or less excited that this is not going to be a haunting of story versus a whole new story?
I am more excited because it's not going to be a haunting of story, because as much as those two stories were great because the houses were as much of a character as the characters themselves, I really wanted this, like, I think I said this when we talked about the show, when it came out, I really want to see Mike Flanagan break away from a single location and see what he does with the characters themselves.
Mm. Yeah. Especially outside, right? If they're going around in the village and whatnot, they have to really work on their character interactions and actually make it feel more grand than it really is.
Right. Because there's only so many times that you can sit there and say, this house is a character, until it goes like, okay, well, this is now becoming to be too much. And I can see where it's coming from. But twice is good. And I think Aaron says this a lot to me in particular. Two times is funny. The third time it's not.
But it's kind of cool though, that it's like self-contained on an island. Cause then the island almost becomes the house. It's just a bigger house.
Don't ruin it for me, Troy.
He really did. He really just took what you didn't want and made it very important.
Right. God damn it.
The island is a character. We have to go back. We have to.
There's going to be a smoke monster. There's going to be a man in black.
There'll be a whole bunch of shit that never gets talked about again. We're just going to introduce it and say, no, it didn't matter because it's all about the characters. Well, then why'd you mention it every episode? Oh.
No.
You're next, Troy.
Anyway, The Shrink Next Door is also coming to Apple TV Plus on November 12th. It's been 8 years since Bill Ferrell.
Are you getting like a kickback?
I totally am.
All the Ted Lasso talk last week, Apple
this
called
is
you.
How he's paying for his Apple Plus. This is how
it was like pick five, and I just went into my Apple TV and just scrolled. I was like, that one.
All right.
Continue. This is actually Will Ferrell and Paul Rudd, 8 years since they've acted together last. Mm. Now the Anchorman alums are reuniting for a comedy based on the podcast of the same name. It stars Paul Rudd as a psychiatrist who begins inserting himself into the lives of his patients, adding adding Catherine Hahn, Casey Wilson, and director Michael Showalter from The Big Sick. It's an impressive collection of comedic talent. And again, November 12th on Apple TV Plus.
I don't think I've ever seen a Showalter thing that was bad.
I haven't, that I can think of.
Catherine Hahn's in it too.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. I'm on board.
The trailer alone was funny.
I just want to roll you up and stick you inside of me.
I hope they have a reference to Sex Panther. This whole thing won't be worth it.
Right?
Absolutely. All right. Well, next up is not The Mandalorian Season 3. I know a lot of people were saying that's my most anticipated. Well, it's not out till after this one. So you probably won't see it until 2022. But coming in this December is John's most excitable character in history. He loves this guy. It's The Book of Boba Fett on Disney Plus. It's coming in December. There's no specific date yet, but December. Trust me, you'll hear about it.
It's a short book. It's, oh, I'm going to kill. Ah!
He's back. He survived.
Mm-hmm.
And he gained like 30 pounds while he was in there.
Hey, don't fat shame him. That's not nice.
He just came out a little older and larger. That's all. It was just weird. Once the most feared bounty hunter in the galaxy, Boba Fett returned to Jabba the Hutt's old palace on Tatooine. Basically, put himself back on the throne as an equally lethal assassin joins him, played by Ming-Na Wen. And that's really all we know about it. It's basically, we're going to follow Boba Fett. And as he takes over for Jabba the Hutt, I don't know what that means, but is anybody but John excited? Troy, are you looking forward to this?
I mean, I'm looking forward to it from what I saw of the characters in the last season of The Mandalorian. I think the characters themselves were actually interesting. My challenge with it's going to be like, do I want to watch 6 to 8 episodes of crap on Tatooine?
Could be fun. I love.
Does Tatooine have enough stuff on it to make it interesting? That's the question.
Well, what I think is fascinating about this character is they finally made him interesting. Now, John, do you acknowledge this? I know you hate the character.
I hate the character. Do I not? Yes, because I do have to admit, when Robert Rodriguez directed the whole episode in which he shows back up again, I was like, God damn it. Because all of a sudden he became pretty damn cool. But I also feel like I have to stick to my guns on this and still be like, Boba Fett sucks. But this guy, whoever he is, maybe he's not the real Boba Fett. I don't care.
You think he's a poser? Like he just found the jetpack and the suit, put it on?
I mean, when Timothy
off of his pants did that, he was pretty cool.
Yeah. The sheriff.
I hope he shows back up, by the way, in any of these shows.
Because we last saw Timothy on Tatooine, if I remember correctly. Yes?
No, it wasn't Tatooine.
No, it was a different
planet. Wasn't on Tatooine where they fight the giant sand dragon thing?
I'm pretty sure it was a different planet.
I don't know. And I know this much about Star Wars fans. If you're not sure, don't commit. I'm not sure. Not committing and not taking the time to Google it because I don't care. If Timothy Oliphant shows up, I'm good with it.
He was avoiding the Star Wars hatred so close so that he was like, I don't care.
I don't.
And they all started coming out of the woodworks to like lightsaber his ass to death.
Dun, 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 dun.
Well, because you know someone, you know, it 4 minutes and 12 seconds of episode 3. This is where he shows up and he does this. Yeah, cool. I was busy banging your mom. All right. So, sorry.
Wow.
It is going to be one of those nights.
Wow. All right. So, following that up, I got The Wheel of Time, November 19th on Amazon. It's an adaptation of Robert Jordan's popular fantasy series. Rosamund Pike's in it. She plays a magician. That's all I need to know. It's Rosamund Pike. Even though she scares the crap out of me, I will still watch her with glee and abandon. And it's a Wheel of Time.
Second greatest grossing fantasy series after Lord of the Rings. So you talk about Amazon, like cash cow. They're doing the Lord of the Rings thing, plus they're doing this. It's like huge for Amazon.
And actually, Troy and I were just, we just went camping this past weekend, and a buddy of mine showed up. And we were having a conversation about the show, because Troy's really excited about it. And he was talking about how he's reading the books. And he also read all the Game of Thrones books. He loved the Game of Thrones series. He said that this series is far better than that series, but equally as intricate. It's just more of like a softer fantasy play. So if you're a Game of Thrones fan, whatever you thought of the last season, you might be interested in the Wheel of Time when it comes to Amazon. And also, it's going to be 3 episodes and then weekly. So no binging.
The thing that Game of Thrones has done is that it's sped up the process to expose people to magic more, because that was used to be a barrier for people when it came to fantasy stuff.
Yeah.
So now, because Game of Thrones has made it more acceptable for more people to watch this sort of thing, like, you can go dive right into magic, and that's pretty cool.
Isn't Star Wars magic?
I don't care anymore.
Okay.
I mean, mystical. It's not
Star
magic.
Wars doesn't mystical. It's space wizards and laser swords.
Jedis
it's
aren't
physics,
magical.
Man. It's physics.
That's magic. Really? Really? Is this where you drop some scientific reason how the frickin' Jedi works? I don't think so. No.
Oh, it's midichlorians, remember? It's a parasite that lives only in Jedis and midichlorians because they feed off of...
Somebody wrote that.
Well, going to different fantasy worlds, in this case prehistoric ones, over on Apple TV Plus's competitor... NBC.
Oh, nice play. You got me.
La Brea is going to come to fruition when a massive sinkhole opens in the middle of Los Angeles. Hundreds fall through to a primeval world forced to band together to survive, while the rest of the world above ground must try and figure out what happened. This is from David Applebaum, a veteran of the Enemy Within and NCIS New Orleans. Created the special effects for a heavy offering from NBC, which will get canceled after the first year. It fair. Features a cast including Justified veteran Natalie Zea.
Yeah.
And a fun fact, Zyra Gorecki, one of the first below-the-knee amputee actresses with a series regular role in a major broadcast television series, also stars in this drama coming September 28th, 9 Eastern on NBC.
Hey, that's cool, man. Good for her.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So I'll stand up for her.
Wow. Wow.
So basically,
dude.
So basically NBC.
Wow.
That's so wrong.
What? Clap. Come on. Yeah.
I am not clapping for that. And now I am making sure you read your email.
I tried to keep going. I couldn't do it.
No.
But basically, the show is going to be the resurrection of Saturday morning cartoon Land of the Lost.
That's exactly what I was thinking. But that sounds interesting. I hope it finds somebody to like it.
And it has better special effects, so the Sleestaks will not have zipper costumes.
I don't know, man. I just watched the first 5 minutes, because they dropped the first 5 minutes of this pilot. It looks a little hokey. It really does. I mean, I'm giving it all the hope in the world, but after they just did this to Manifest, do you really want to commit to an NBC show that's going to be very serialized and very fantasy / science fiction driven, whatever it is, where everybody's living on Hollow Earth and all that jive. Do you really want to commit to that? That's the concern, I think.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Fox TV show, what was it, Terra Nova?
I was about to say Terra Nova, yeah.
Yeah, where they went back in the past to do the prehistoric thing, but then they still had the other side of the wormhole, and there was like a war that was happening. So, yeah.
Is that how that went down?
I think so. I'm trying to remember that last season.
There was more than one season?
Yeah, I think there was two.
Oh, all right. Obviously. That's surprising. I just, like, every single time travel thing, you don't go into the past, because if you step on a butterfly, you'll destroy, you know, Robert E. Lee statues or something. And
John's on fire tonight.
He's on fire tonight.
Wow.
Like, who do I want to offend next? Bam, bam, bam. Jesus. Oh, okay. Well, next up is The Wonder Years. Yeah, I'm actually excited for this. Coming Wednesdays, 8:30 on ABC, starting September 22nd. Man, it's from executive producer Lee Daniels, who did Empire, and Fred Savage. He's involved, but Don Cheadle's going to narrate this. as they reimagine the show with a black family this time. And then this time the focus is on Dean Williams, who's played by Alicia Williams, a 12-year-old boy growing up in Montgomery, Alabama in the late 1960s. And also dad is Dulé Hill. If you don't know who Dulé Hill is,
get out.
Suck it. Well, obviously from The West Wing, but also from Psych, probably my favorite show of all time. So I'm very excited to see him get some more TV shows under his belt. He's a great actor. He's very talented, very funny, and a very good dramatic actor, too. So I'm really curious to see what he brings to the role of the dad.
Are you kind of bummed that it's taking place in the 60s, though?
No,
like they're not doing it during modern times, kind of just staying with the original premise.
No, I want the perspective of a black family because it's a perspective I'm not that familiar with. And I would like to see that. And I think it's a very great cast. I want to see that. I think that's important. Honestly, in this day and age, I think it's important.
For sure.
Yeah, I would agree. I almost have like a joke for that. But then my brain said, no, that's dumb. Don't do that.
And it would be in the show and you'd have to live with it. Enjoy your next job interview. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
All right. Next up.
Do so many of those.
Well, and technically, Danica McKellar could show back up because she was with Dulé Hill in The West Wing. So hopefully we can see Danica at a bus stop somewhere in Montgomery.
I don't need to think there's time travel involved.
Yeah, because wasn't the Wonder Years actually the 70s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there would have to be time travel involved. I don't want to see that. I just feel like that would... that's too meta. That's too meta for me.
All right. So my final show from Disney Plus, they haven't exactly said when this is coming out. They're just saying it's coming out this year. This is Ms. Marvel. Marvel's first Muslim superhero, Kamala Khan, gets her own TV show about surviving high school before she goes on to star as the next Captain Marvel in the Marvel. Yeah. If you haven't had any exposure to Ms. Marvel, especially the Kamala Khan version of Ms. Marvel, you're missing out. It's a very heartwarming, very good story. I hope they do the comics some justice, which it's Disney. So likely they will do the comics some justice, but this is a really great show that I can't wait to watch.
Now I couldn't find any mention of this coming out this fall. Are you sure about that?
Everywhere I looked said it's this fall, but okay, to be announced.
Okay.
Then I'm still trying to figure out how it goes from Captain Marvel to Miss Marvel to Captain Marvel. Like, that is all confusing to me.
Well, in the comics, the mantle of Captain Marvel is passed from person to person. So Annette Bening was Mar-Vell, which was actually a male character in the books, but they made her female in this. And she's supposed to be the original Captain Marvel, where she has all these powers that she can do. And then Brie Larson's Captain Marvel is actually supposed to be Miss Marvel. And as time progresses, she becomes Captain Marvel. And then Kamala Khan's character is actually an Inhuman. So unless they changed how her story comes about, she's actually an Inhuman that gains powers. So
interesting.
I'm more confused than ever now. So we'll just talk about marriage, because marriage is always confusing, especially when we're talking about scenes from a marriage with Jessica Chastain and Oscar Isaac starring in this Haggai Levi's remake of Ingmar Bergman's 1973 miniseries about a marital union coming undone. Talky and intimate.
Sounds terrible.
It kicks off with Mira and Jonathan answering a researcher's questions about gender dynamics in their relationship and goes off the rails from there. It actually started on Sunday, so it's airing now on HBO and HBO Max, Sundays 9 p.m. Eastern, for a real big suckfest. But it looks super interesting.
I love this cast. I love Jessica Chastain, and I love Oscar Isaac. Why are you so stoked for this show, though? Because, I mean, it really does kind of sound like Marriage Story, just with different leads.
Sounds like Prozac will be needed.
I think I find the human connection of relationship interesting, and seeing how that plays out and how they're able to either work through the challenges or what the challenges are. I just think it's just a fascinating human study. So to be able to like have a TV show that can actually walk through that for a couple episodes, you know, 6, 7, 8, whatever it is, like, that's fine. If this was a 22 thing, I would definitely not be jumping on board. But it is, like you said, Jessica Chastain and Oscar Isaac. So I think that that's going to be really interesting to watch them play off of each other.
All right. Well, next up is Dope Sick, coming out on October 13th on Hulu. And this series chronicles how Purdue Pharma sought to make OxyContin the biggest drug in the world by claiming it was non-addictive. And we'll go inside the corporate boardrooms, we'll go on the front lines of the DEA, and we're going to hang around in Virginia a little bit. And also, the cast includes Michael Keaton, Rosario Dawson, and Caitlin Dever. So, yeah, Michael Keaton's an executive producer, too. This just looks like something that could be very powerful as it examines, like, the worst drug epidemic in U.S. history, I would argue. It's just a fascinating story if told right, and you've got all the pieces in place. Barry Levinson's he's directing it, too. So you've got talent all over the place. I think this is going to be great.
Is it going to be done in a docu-series style, or is it going to be just like an actual show?
I will let you know on October 13th.
No, I don't almost want to check this out just for the cast. The cast just sounds incredible.
Yeah, it's being shot like a series, though. It's a limited series. Yep.
Well, I think you were out, right, Arjun?
No, I got one more.
Oh, you got one more. Go ahead, then.
I've only done four because apparently I skipped over one. I was like, wait a minute. How are we still going? I got on November 19th on Netflix, because most of my stuff is on Netflix and I'm not ashamed of it. Cowboy Bebop. This stars John Cho, and it's a live action adaptation to the celebrated Japanese anime series about a ragtag group of bounty hunters chasing criminals across space. I never watched the anime because I just don't have time for anime for whatever reason, unless it's a really special case, which this should be, but I just never made time for it. However, everything about this show that I've seen, the way they're paying homage to the anime series and how much effort they're putting into it, I can't wait to see this in live action.
And I think that's one of the things. Like, there's so many good anime properties that people never will experience because it's anime. Like, I'd love to see more anime get this kind of treatment where they move it over to live action, because I think it'd be very well received by a lot of people in certain cultures, in circles.
To be clear, I enjoy anime. There's just so much of it that I get overwhelmed to which ones I'm going to watch. And then there are some of them that have such great weird tone to them that I just don't have the patience for. But I do enjoy, like, the artistic side of it. If you were going to tell me it's going to be a mecha thing, I would be even more excited. So I can't wait till we finally start talking about Gundam whenever that happens.
That could be good.
Yeah.
I'm really excited for this because I love bounty hunters in space. I mean, Firefly, and I don't know the anime. I don't know anything about it. I just know it looks cool. I like John Cho. Everybody I know that has read it or seen it, whatever it is, love it. Loves it. So I'm excited to see a live action version because I'll be perfectly honest, I'll never watch the anime. I just don't get into anime or animation. I just don't like
cartoons in general.
That would be animation. Yes. I'm not into that. Live action, now you got me. Now I'm interested. Let's play. And I love Space Bounty Hunters. That's fun.
Space Bounty Hunters, but yet you haven't watched The Expanse.
I watched one episode, and after my nap, I decided not against it.
You know, I did a job interview yesterday, and the guy and I talked about The Expanse for a little bit because he had this whole it was a pretty amazing job interview I did yesterday. We didn't talk about anything to do with the job. He's like, all right, 10 minutes in, he's like, I like you, I'm gonna go ahead and recommend that you go to the next level. But we were talking about everything under the sun, and he was like, have you read The Expanse yet or watched the show? I'm like, no. He's like, you got to read the books or watch the show. Maybe watch the show first. And he started telling me all about it.
Maybe I'll try again.
I mean, he did say that the first season's slow.
Yeah, the first season sets a lot of stuff up, but once you get to two, three, four, oh my gosh, yeah, it's so good.
You should have just stopped at two. When you start saying two, three, four, that's when he taps out.
It's pretty much.
They're short seasons.
I hate that. What does that mean? How many episodes? 14, 15, 27? What's short in your version?
10 or less. So if you're talking 40 episodes total, it's like 222 seasons.
But it was boring. And, you know, it used to be like, you know, I'd watch a whole season. Then there's so many shows and stuff now, you know, that I got down to like John's Rule of Three, where you got three episodes. Now I'm down to literally one episode. You get one episode, and sometimes I'm not even going to make it to the end of that episode. You got 4 minutes to lock me in, and then you got 40 more minutes to keep me there. That's what I say. Get moving. Let's go.
He just likes changing the channels quickly.
It's the price of quantity, man. It's the price of quantity. There's too much stuff out there. I will not, as much as I love quality entertainment, and I'll do it in a film because a film is 2 hours. So I know I'll be done in 2 hours no matter what. If you got a slow burn, okay, fair. Slow burn me. Go ahead. Get me into it. Set the mood. Get the pace going. Whatever you need to do. in a TV show, I need to get to the point a little faster if you want me to stick on the ride. Find a way to establish your characters quickly so I'm interested in their journey. Because if you're boring right off the bat and you don't have characters that are interesting, that's your fault. And I don't feel bad for you. I'm just not interested. I don't want to keep going. So many people say, stay with the show for a year and then you'll finally get into it. And it's just like, who's got time to spend a year trying to get in, or a season to get in a show?
I felt like that's what Aaron told me for Breaking Bad, though.
That's correct. But Breaking Bad was 8-9 years ago when it started, you know? I mean, and it really became hugely popular 5 years ago or 6 years ago. So it isn't like it's a recent problem. These things have happened because we have so much content now. You just have to be a little quicker. That's why many people try to watch Breaking Bad now and they can't get into it. I'm convinced that's why so many people just do not get into it, because it is the first season is very slow. Once you hit season two, all bets are off. But you have to get to season two, which is only 6 or 7 episodes. But even then, in this day and age, that's a lot for people.
And he still hasn't finished The Leftovers.
The Leftovers sucked.
Right now.
Dude, The Leftovers sucked. I don't care how many people praise that show or put it in top 10 list. That show sucked. I hated every character. There was nobody in there I enjoyed. I've watched it 3 freaking times just because you won't shut up about it. And I feel obligated, like I owe you a debt, like a blood debt. So I keep rewatching the show that I hate just for you. And I still can't get into it.
That's kind of the whole purpose of season one, is you're not supposed to like anybody.
Why do I want to watch a show about people I hate? That doesn't sound fun. That's not something I'm into. I'm glad people love it, though.
Well, it sucks. Hopefully this one survives the jump and actually stays on Fox for a while, because The Big Leap is down on their luck characters trying out for a ballet competition. It's kind of a mashup of Glee and Smash, which serves up plenty of heart and just the right amount of cynicism in the pilot to suggest heartache and dramatics ahead. Simone Rancancer gets the spotlight as Gabby, and curvy dancer we meet in the series prologue, while Scandal star Scott Foley is actually Nick Smart, the jaded Simon Cowell producer of the show. Terry Polo and Piper Perabo also have starring roles, so I love myself some Scott Foley. I love Piper Perabo. I will definitely be checking this out September 20th at 9 p.m. Eastern on Fox.
I thought that it was going to look like hot garbage. I'm not a Scott Foley fan. I just find him to be, he's like the Rob Lowe of Fox. He's just always like the average actor.
Low rent Rob Lowe.
He's like, there you go. He's low rent Rob Lowe. But I went and watched the trailer for this, and it actually looks really good. I'm surprised. And I hate reality shows, but it seemed like they're going for, he has more to him than just the Simon Cowell, where he's just, you know, shouting orders and barking things. I mean, he seems like he has a heart, and he starts to care about some of these people. And that made it far more interesting than I initially thought.
Yeah. And I think the stories with the people that are trying out, I think those stories could be really interesting television.
Could be
to see how those progress. Yeah.
If you do it right.
If you do it right.
You know, I mean, I don't, the hard part with me is when you watch a reality show, I immediately do not empathize with anybody, because I just think you're just trying to get famous. That's all you're trying to do, is just trying to find a shortcut to fame. And, you know, good for them if they get it. It's just not something that I care to watch, you know. But this kind of was looking at some of the behind the scenes and some of those people's struggles. And if you could paint that picture in a different light or with a different brush, I think that could be really interesting.
Yeah, because it's not a reality competition show. It's actually a drama about a reality competition show, which is kind of like what Unreal did for the behind the scenes of The Bachelor. So that was really interesting to see, like, what happens to actually make The Bachelor when that show was airing. It was really, really good with Shree Appleby.
Interesting. Okay, now, any honorable mentions that either one of you have?
Nope.
No, that was enough. I was tired.
Okay, well, I'm going to run through.
What about you?
I'm going to run through some that I thought should be mentioned. I'll try to be quick, though. There's a show on Apple TV Plus, Troy's home network, October 22nd, called Invasion, where how would you react if aliens landed on Earth? And I don't know, but I'm interested to find out. We haven't seen much about what the show's going to be, but that's the hook. So I'm interested to know if that means we're actually going to be playing with alien life on planet Earth, or if we're afraid of them in some way, some manner. We'll find that out.
Yeah, the trailer looked very high production value, so mm-hmm. It could be pretty cool. Like War of the Worlds.
Sam Neill's in it.
Yep.
Looks good.
He ain't cheap.
No, he ain't cheap. I mean, you know, he's not. expensive, but he's not.
Is he one of the aliens? Is he coming back from the Event Horizon?
No.
Wow. That was a... Well, at least you didn't offend anybody with your jokes. So this is one that's coming out allegedly fall on HBO Max. And just like that, that is the Sex and the City revival that is coming back, but without Samantha. I didn't watch Sex and the City, but my wife watched it religiously. And when I told her about the show, she got excited. Then I said Samantha wasn't part of it. She said she doesn't want anything to do with it. So to me, that says that's going to be a common reaction from fans. But maybe it'll be a whole new kind of show as well.
Samantha was played by whom?
Kim Cattrall.
Oh, right. Yeah. All right.
Mm-hmm. A couple other quick ones. I Know What You Did Last Summer comes out on Amazon on October 15th, which, John, you mentioned this like 10 times over the year, so I'm kind of surprised you didn't pick it. But the lowest...
I have?
You have. Wow, you really don't even know what you to say anymore, do you?
No, I... really don't, because people are gonna call me out for saying weird things on the show. I'll be like, I did. That doesn't sound like me. No, here's your voice. Yeah, I don't think it's me.
Well, I get it now. So he offends everybody, and then like 3 weeks from now he's gonna like, I said that.
Yeah, smart. The Lois Duncan youth novel, if you never read it, is very different from what you saw in the movie. But it's, this show is going to be about a killer stalking a group of teens who are involved in a hit and run accident that may or may not have been an accident. So that's, I mean, it's the same kind of concept. I think they're going to adhere more to the book though. And that's a lot different. So look that up if you want to.
And far less sweaters in this version.
What are you waiting for? Ah!
Can they just bring Jennifer Love Hewitt back just for that scene?
I'd watch that.
Yeah. Over and over again.
That's the kind of cameo I want.
Right.
Where they're just walking down the street having a conversation about the accent they had, and some girl's in the background twirling around in her sweater screaming that, and they just keep moving. Crazy.
What if the big reveal is that it is Jennifer Love Hewitt that's the killer?
I'm fine.
That would be kind of cool, actually.
I'm good with it. Give her a hook. Let's see what she does. All right. Dan Brown's The Lost Symbol comes out on Peacock September 16th. Probably already out by the time you heard this. Da Vinci Code's Robert Langdon heads off on another global conspiracy. But again, it's on Peacock. So if you have it and you watch it, that's where it'll be. I don't know anybody that actually, well, I know a couple people that check it out, but I don't know anybody that really watches Peacock often.
Like watches Peacock? No. Has Peacock? Yes.
Well, Comcast gives it to you.
Exactly. That's the only reason that it's there.
It's like, I have Peacock. I went into it once to watch Psych the Movie 2, and I don't like how the app works. I think it's clunky as hell.
Super clunky. Yeah. It's a terrible, terribly designed app. Oy. So if this would have been on any other network, say Apple TV Plus, I totally would have had this on my list.
Oh, for God's sakes.
But because it wasn't on any other
network.
Is
this what I sound like with Netflix?
Yes.
Kind of.
Yeah.
This is what I sound like with Netflix?
Yes.
Jeez, I'm so sorry.
But you don't get different answers if you ask the same question twice, just so you know. I mean, just if you repeat it, it's still the same question. The answer's still yes. You sound just like that.
Did I repeat it?
Yeah. Did I say that? What? Last one.
I don't repeat questions.
Last one is October 12th on Siffy. It's Chucky. And I feel like you have to mention this one because it's just so weird. Don Mancini, who created Child's Play, is bringing the gory, campy killer doll back to the small screen. Not back. He's bringing it there for the first time. In an update of the Chucky saga that... This is what they're calling it. The Chucky saga. What saga? Dude, it's a possessed doll that ran around that everyone should have murdered 5 seconds into seeing him. He's an ugly doll. He's got a creepy voice. Just kill him already. But he's coming back. And apparently, Jennifer Tilly's coming back. Brad Dourif's back as the voice of Chucky. The original Chucky foe, Alex Vincent's coming back. So they're going to pay a lot of love to previous Chucky movies.
But Universal put this on Siffy instead of putting it on the Peacock.
Because they know Peacock is not being watched.
Siffy's barely being watched.
I didn't realize Siffy was still around.
My guess is you will see it on Peacock right around it or shortly after it airs, though. It'll kind of be like a Hulu thing where FX and then pops up on Hulu. I'll bet you'll get like something like that.
And again, they're putting a horror movie on Siffy versus like AMC
series.
Or
horror series.
Horror series versus like an AMC or an FX.
I think they own. Doesn't Universal own Siffy?
Yes.
Yes.
I know. So, it's an in-house property.
I'm interested. Brad Dourif's back. He's great at that voice. I mean, he really is. So
yeah,
but isn't it his own voice anyways?
Yeah, that's why he's great at it.
He's great at that voice. He just shows up and talks.
Very talented at being himself. Good for him.
Those are the best kind of jobs. Just show up, right, and have to say something. You don't have to act. Don't have to wear anything. You just wear your sweats and Zumbas and t-shirt and I'm here.
Good.
Look, I got the best role for you. It's going to be so easy. This is what you're going to do. Look, let me show you what you're going to look like. And it's like a skeleton with meat hanging off of it and knives for hands. And it just like, you know, the tongue is also a knife. But this is why you're perfect for it. Just talk. You don't have to do anything special. You don't have to even act. Just read the script. It's going to sound great. That's a terrible job.
Especially because his tongue is a knife. So he's going to be like, da, 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 da.
What the hell are you guys talking about? All right. So now we're going to most anticipated returning shows and why. You don't have to go through the whole like network and debut date and everything else. I mean, you can mention the network if you want so people know where to find it. I just want to know why you're so excited about whatever shows you're going to be talking about. So Troy, run through the shows you're most excited to return.
All three? Okay.
Yeah. Just go ahead.
Well, first off,
just take a breath between them so we can discuss.
Sure, sure. But I really enjoy The Resident on Fox. It returns September 21st. They had a really interesting end to the last season where Conrad and Nurse Nevin get married and had a kid. And this season is going to open up with some tragedy that we have no idea what it's about. It's kind of the whole story for this season because Emily Van Camp just had a kid in real life. And Emily Van Camp will not be returning to the show as Nurse Nevin this year. So I'm curious to see how the show goes with two
this year
of the
or
cast.
she's not coming back.
She's not
after
coming back
this
for the
year.
No, she's not coming back for this current season that's coming up in September.
Oh, I thought she wasn't. I thought she was done after this season is what I thought I read. Okay, I'm sorry.
Well, that's the thing. Like nobody knows, right? So is this like she was kidnapped or she was taken or she ran away from? Like there's all these kind of stories you could play with because she could show up again later in the season. But as the season starts, it is without Emily Van Camp from the jump. So I'm curious to see how that's going to go.
Is that a possibility with this show for people to be like kidnapped or terrored or whatever?
Yeah.
A possibility.
The possibility. Sure.
It was a medical show.
It's a better version of Grey's because it does more than just the medical stuff.
Ah,
it's actually more about the hospital business and corporations. So you could have like a corporate espionage story, which is kind of cool.
You almost had me, and then I'm right back out again.
Second one is, of course, A Million Little Things on ABC comes back September 22nd. And because of its shortened COVID third season, this season the episode count will be 20 episodes. And at the end of last season, it ended in a pretty, pretty dark spot for most of our characters. So I'm curious to see how this is actually going to play out, especially for Gary. He is not in a good place, and he basically went and broke into someone's house and is either kidnapping him or going to kill him. We're not sure. So really excited to see how the cliffhanger plays out when it comes back on September 22nd. And then,
I stopped watching that show in the first season, and you mentioned that one a lot more than Last of Us nowadays. So is that more interesting to you than Last of Us?
Way more interesting. It feels like they're real stories and real characters.
You mean like, This Is Us?
No. I mean,
no,
Million Little
what
Things.
What did I say? Last of Us?
Last of Us.
Which is it's far more
a different property entirely.
Far more interesting. Far more interesting.
No, This Is Us seems like This Is Us is a, we are going to write to the cry. Because we're going to make you cry in every episode. And I don't like that because it's like, it almost feels like a little gaslighting maybe. Where A Million Little Things feels like real characters that I would see on the street and I can literally have a cup of coffee with them. And they're going through real problems and real stuff. So you can just sit down and go, yeah, I feel that. I understand what you're going through. And they had a really great sequence last season about Sophie, the daughter, where she was actually molested from her music teacher. And just how to deal with that and the fallout from all of that. And that's the interesting part with Gary's storyline for what's coming up in the next season. So I think they deal with some really, really good issues in a really great way.
And another exciting thing, because for a Psych fan, for people that love Psych, James Rodet and Dulé Hill were both on Psych. Now they're both on ABC. They're going to be at the same mixers.
They are.
Yay.
And okay. Let me tell you, if you like James Rhodey in anything he's done, including Psych, James Rhodey in this role specifically,
he's very good.
It's a little bit like Sean, but if Sean was a serious dude, and it's just, he is so good in this role. Good.
Yeah.
So good.
I remember that from the first season. He very much impressed me with, wow, you have real talent. You're not just jokey and sarcastic. Like, you can be a real character. And there were times where I'm like, he's going to make me cry a little bit.
Yeah. If you enjoyed the first season, I would highly recommend coming back for 2 and 3, Aaron. It's a really good show.
Yeah, but so, now there's all this new stuff. So by the time I get done with the new stuff, then I'll have more new stuff.
I know, exactly right.
Shiny car. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know, the way you described it, you know, the shortened COVID season, now they're going to come at you with 20 episodes. That sounds like punishment.
It sounds like it's a good 2 10-episode series. Like 10 eps, take a break, 10 eps.
This is how you're selling network TV now? No, man, it's like 2 10-episode seasons is what this is.
Right.
It's like 50, but they used to do the 4A and the 4B.
God, except they're all in the same year. But hey, it's different.
It's different.
My God.
My final one, though, is, of course, Aaron's favorite show of all time. The Blacklist moves to Thursdays, October 21st on NBC. Those of you that know what happened at the end of season 8, where basically everything was answered, not to some people's satisfaction, but it was an answer. And so this basically is a reboot of the series, starting from a clean slate, as the show creator John Bokenkamp left at the end of last season. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen next, because we have different characters. We have some of the same characters, but it's a whole new trajectory forward. The mythos is no longer hanging over the head. So we can get some pretty cool case of the week bad guy stuff, which will be interesting.
Really, when you plan these out, these shows you were mentioning, you should have put Blacklist before A Million Little Things, because the prospect of watching The Blacklist again makes me want to take a bullet. So I feel like
that's why I saved it to the end, because then it was like, oh, there's Troy's crap again, Troy's crap again. Now I really want to kill myself.
Right.
Well, yeah, I got more about Blacklist coming up. You'll see, but I'll get there when I get there. So mine most anticipated are just a few. Cobra Kai, December. Really, I don't know what more I can say. If you haven't already watched Cobra Kai, it's freaking awesome. Sure, I moderated a panel with these guys, so I'm a little slighted. Who is whistling a song? What are you whistling?
It was me.
What were you whistling?
It was just like, just, oh, whistling. Here comes Aaron talking about his thing again.
Oh, you know, Cobra Kai, you know, if you haven't watched it, I can't believe, you know. Just nonchalantly being over here, watching it.
You know what? How do I mute his mic? Like, just completely. Can I do that? Anyway, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens. And Thomas Ian Griffith is coming back from Karate Kid 3. And he was a ridiculous character. But he's Thomas Ian Griffith is a really good martial artist, or he was. So I'm looking forward to Cobra Kai.
What I'm glad about that show is that YouTube was smart and dropped it and Netflix picked it up. Because I think that if it would have started on Netflix from the beginning, it would have been even more huge than it is now.
I agree.
But I was just so glad it got off of YouTube. That was like the dumbest move. But glad they funded it to get it started, because it's fantastic. So good.
And you know what's funny? Netflix passed on it originally.
Right.
Because they went to Netflix and Netflix passed on it. It wasn't a YouTube series because that was their first choice. That's just where they ended up. Dexter New Blood, which comes out November 9th on Showtime. Why am I excited for this? Because according to the showrunner,
you're glutton for punishment.
They're going to give it a proper ending. So all the people that complained, they didn't like how Dexter became a lumberjack. Well, now he's enjoying his new life in upstate New York, and kids in the small town start turning up missing. So his dark passenger may or may not return, but he's definitely got a new foe challenging him.
Mm.
So it's exciting. And I saw the trailer is out. If you want to go watch the trailer for it. Oh my God.
It's very lumberjacky.
Looks great.
I'm a lumberjack.
A lumberjack? Yeah. Okay.
I had to say it wrong, because otherwise we get, you know, strikes against us, right?
Sure. That's an interesting way
to
spin that.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
October 15th, Joe Has a Baby.
Woo!
I'm actually surprised you're bringing this one up, because I thought you didn't like the second season.
That's what I thought, too.
It was ridiculous. But I can't deny that it was, I couldn't stop watching it. Like, it's not a good show. Can we agree it's a dumb show? Like, it's, I don't understand all the women that are, oh, I love him. I'd like to find me a man like Joe. He will kill you. What are you talking about? What are you talking? He's literally everything women say they don't want in their life. But as soon as they see, isn't it nice how he's always paying attention to her? And like, that is stalking. That's not nice. No, he's crazy.
It's because he's pretty, though. That's what it is. Joe is pretty if also.
This character was played by Steve Buscemi. This would not be popular at all. It would be a horror show. It would be on Syfy.
Right. Right.
All I'm saying.
And he lands it. He landed that one. That was great, ladies and gentlemen. He gets a 10. He gets a 10 for that one.
But the twist in season two, I thought, was really great. Like the end.
I didn't even bother with season two because Aaron sat here telling us how stupid it was.
It was pretty stupid.
The front matter is pretty lame. But when you get to the end, it's like, damn, that just happened.
I mean, it's more like I'm more interested in the hook for season three than I was in how, because I do think how they resolve season two is one of the dumbest things I've seen in television in a long time. But I'm just like, well, the show's dumb, so you just go with it, I guess. So I'm kind of excited, I guess. I don't, but not in a, this is riveting, great television, it should win an Emmy, because it shouldn't. It's just something dumb to watch, where I don't care what happens. Like, everyone could literally die in the first episode, and I'd be like, cool.
What happens next?
More importantly, is it pregnancy the whole time, or is the baby actually come, and then, of course, then you have baby in the show. So
no,
does Joe use it as a frag grenade? Does he use it as bait?
I hope so. That would make it interesting again. There we go.
Yeah.
Use the kid as bait.
Yeah, he hires a nanny to watch the baby, and then he falls in love with the nanny or something. I don't know.
He's going to stalk a neighbor. He's going to obsess over the baby. Just do something crazy. That's fine. And last one. It's not one I don't need to watch every episode, which is why I like it. But CSI Las Vegas, because Gil Grissom is coming back. I love William Peterson. I think he is just a fun actor to watch. So I am excited that he's coming back to CSI.
Isn't Georgia also coming back?
She is, but I don't care about her. I like William Peterson. I'm a big fan. Big fan.
Okay.
That's all I've got. John.
So my three are pretty easy three. Two of them are on Netflix. Big surprise there. My first one off of Netflix is The Witcher Season 2. I was not a game player of this. I've become a story reader of this, and I love the season, the first season, especially when I turn subtitles on because I don't do that often. But I ended up having to turn subtitles on because everyone's accent is super thick in that show. But such a great show, and I'm really excited for what's going to happen next.
I wish I would have turned subtitles on when I watched it the first time. Maybe I'll do that for the rewatch, because I have to rewatch it. I can't remember hardly anything except for Hunchback got naked a lot.
Right. Oh, and there's the, fuck.
Exactly. Just those two, those three things. That's what I remember.
Right. Right. All right. Following that up, we have Sex Education that's coming up on Netflix also. I love this show. I believe it's going to be the last season of this show, and it's so fun to watch. I love the characters. It feels like something that's different and happy and enjoyable, and it's just a good show. So, Sex Education.
I would concur. It's very quirky and just interesting and fun.
Yeah. All right. And my final one is on FX as well as Hulu, What We Do in the Shadows. I really love the movie. I finally last year sat down and got myself caught up on What We Do in the Shadows. This show is so smart and so fun, and it doesn't give a damn about you whatsoever. And I really respect that about it. And I'm so happy that I get to watch more of this show.
Is it already start this season or no?
I believe it has, actually.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought my friend was watching it the other night.
And listeners, we took a poll and we took listeners. Top six. I'm going to be weird. Not top five. Top six TV shows are most excited about. I could do 10, I guess. Let's do 10. Chucky, LaBrie, Why the Last Man? Like, why? Why are you the last man? That's the question. Foundation, Great British Baking Show.
Yeah.
Okay.
Those are my people.
But you're going to use LaBrie when they bake their stuff.
Right.
Just stop.
Not La Brea.
Not La Brea.
Oh, you. Okay. It's a funnier joke if it's because I said it wrong. All right. Now I'm on board. La Brea, sorry. Then Dexter, The Wheel of Time, The Witcher, The Book of Boba Fett, and Hawkeye. Many said The Mandalorian, but like I said, I don't think it comes out till next year. So, yeah, I'm kind of surprised that Dexter is as high as that, but I know a lot of people that are stoked that Dexter's coming back.
Are you stoked because it's Dexter and you like the character, or are you stoked because the ending was not an ending and you want a real ending?
I like the ending. I'm not on board with that. Now, I think a lot of that has to do with I watched that ending long after the show had went away. So I wasn't watching it in the moment. I had no zero hype. I was just kind of like, oh, how are they going to wrap this up? Some of it was a little silly, yes. But I also had no problem. The only thing I had a problem with was him giving his kid away. Like, I thought that was really stupid. Outside of that, I mean, but I kind of understood it. Outside of that, I mean, the whole show is ridiculous. So it always amazes me how people are like, I can swallow this, but I can't swallow that. Okay, well, it was fine. It wasn't great. It wasn't fine.
What I'll be interested in is if anybody can pick this up without having to watch any of other Dexter. This be their first intro, Leverage. Like, you could pick up that Leverage reboot and pick it up from day one and not have to know anything else, and it was great.
They are pitching it as Dexter New Blood, so that almost makes it seem like maybe you could, and I would think they probably would sell it that way just to get... I mean, you could recap it pretty easy, couldn't you?
Yeah, I suppose you could, like, yeah, summarize it very quickly, some conversation.
Sure. Or do, like, a...
Flashbacks.
Opening. Memories. Narration. Just do a Lord of the Rings 10-minute opening. Where you recap the whole series. And then it was a lumberjack. Who knew?
Fade in on him chopping a tree in the woods.
I survived a hurricane. What? I did. And now I'm a lumberjack. All right. Well, remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group, which is The Hollywood Outsider. It's on Facebook. It's a private group. You have to look for it. Or on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. Our show is independently funded, so all the expenses come out of our own pockets. And Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcast. If you like the show, please help us at Patreon, patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. And when you donate there, you also get bonus content. We have a monthly series called Bad Movie Night, where we look at a movie that some have deemed bad, but we really enjoy, or at least one of us does. And we kind of talk about what we liked or didn't like about it. Usually that's a lot of fun. And also we have a bonus episode where we talk about stuff we wouldn't normally talk about on the show, and we'll answer any Patreon questions if you ask them through Patreon. So there you go. Patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. Now we've got three reviews we mentioned earlier, but before we do that, we got one thing called You Can Do It, where each host, speaking of TV shows, takes a returning TV series that you used to love but are now struggling with and find one legitimately positive element to it that keeps you going. John.
All right. So this was kind of difficult for me because I've grown very accustomed to just dropping shit in the middle of watching it when it gets to the point where I'm struggling with it. Mm-hmm. However, Legends of Tomorrow, when that show first started, I thought it was pretty fun. And then after a while, it just became the same thing over and over again. Oh, great. We're in this time period and we're going to do this stupid thing with superheroes and time travel and do screwing up stuff. And it got really old really fast. The one good thing that would keep me to continue to watch that show, Katie Lotz.
Really?
I would watch her read a phone book.
What if she literally did? What if that was an actual episode? She goes back in time to where phone books existed and reads from one.
Right. Well, I guess I'm watching that episode then, because I would watch that. I'm a little upset that she's not our Miss Marvel or Captain Marvel.
Really? You think she's that good?
She can totally do better than Brie Larson.
I don't really think that would be a stretch for anybody at this point.
See?
And I like Brie Larson. I just don't think she's very good at that role.
Right. Yeah. Same.
All right. Good deal. Troy.
Grey's Anatomy. Oh, Grey's Anatomy. You had one chance to kill off Meredith Grey last season. It was so close. But yet Meredith Grey lives on. I can't do it. Except.
Yeah, I was going to say, this doesn't sound like the right homework assignment.
Except this season, Peter Gallagher is joining the cast. And he's going to be a recurring character. Mr. Eyebrows himself.
Huh.
So ever since I saw Peter on the OC and he was like just this great straight up dad to Seth and the gang, like I'll watch anything Peter Gallagher is in. So because Peter Gallagher is there, I'm actually going to show up and watch yet another freaking season of Grey's Anatomy.
Well, I'm sorry about that, but it's just something that always bothers me. Guys like him, where they have these big bushy eyebrows, every single set has a makeup and styling team. Do none of them suggest that's they're too thick? You look ridiculous. Like your eyebrows look like they're attacking us. Like nobody says anything about this. And just to get them to whittle them down a little bit, like just brick by brick, just get through that forest.
Can we shape these for you a little bit?
Something.
I think it's like the iconic look for Peter, though.
Yeah, it really is. If he didn't have those eyebrows, you wouldn't know who he was.
Exactly. Like Peter Gallagher pulls it off. Now, Morgan Freeman in Dreamcatcher, different story.
They didn't tell you the Dreamcatcher were actually his eyebrows.
Exactly right.
That sounds fantastic.
There were little alien caterpillars sitting over his eyes.
Okay. So mine, The Blacklist. It ended. Oh. It ended. It had an ending. There is zero. The showrunner walked away. The lead actress walked away. Coincidentally, her character's not as relevant anymore. It ended. It had a legitimate story ending. Why do you think you need to continue? Oh, I remember. Money. As long as James Spader enjoys that money, that show is going to stay on the air. Do we all agree on this?
Yes.
He's not, there's nobody beating down his door right now.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I understand it. From a financial perspective, if I'm in his shoes, I totally get it. But from a story perspective, it hurts the show. This one hurts the show.
More importantly, as Netflix is writing the checks for the international audience.
True.
And they keep writing those checks. They're going to keep taking the checks.
And it's a huge show on Netflix and a huge show overseas still.
Huge.
Yeah, still huge. So I thought it had been dragging it out for the last 3 years. And then I'm like, it ended. Oh my God, it ended. And so I'm sitting here and I'm thinking like one positive element to keep watching this train keep falling and careening off the train tracks. And I couldn't think of one, but
Aaron got his own homework assignment wrong.
But then I remembered I happen to love Troy Heinrichs, so I will still watch it and still do The Blacklist Exposed with him this season. And I haven't told him yet. So this is the official announcement. I will do it. I'm going to take more time off. I'm going to negotiate my contract. But I will do it. So, and if it's abysmal, I'm not promising I stay the whole season, though. Because if it's horrible, I got to leave at some point and just cry. But I will do it because I love him. And I think it, obviously, the whole show would be ruined if I'm not there.
This is true. Since certain theories happen to pan out the way they did, like Aaron gets to start fresh and clean. He gets to predict the next 9 years of the show.
Sure. I can get shit wrong all over again. Sweet. Okay. Well, there you go. So share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group on Twitter. We're at Buy Popcorn. We got reviews coming up. We're not done yet. Or our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can find John's artwork on Insta and Twitter at rjohndraws. You can find Troy Heinrichs at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter and The Blacklist Exposed in your podcast feeds. And me, I'm presenting Hitchcock and Blacklist and at Aaron Smirks. And yes, that is that was a very debatable thing. I'd actually told Troy that's my last season. So I will come back.
The last three seasons, he's basically going after and modeling his superhero, Mr. Brett Favre.
He is kind of the greatest man of all time. Just saying. He doesn't pout like a bitch when he loses.
What a horrible game.
What a horrible game.
Horrible game.
Sorry, only Packer fans understood what we were talking about, but if you were a Packer fan, you understood what we were talking about.
I think anybody that watched football at all understands how bad the Packers were.
Oh, jeez. And speaking of football, you know, something occurred to me while we were watching it, and this is a total aside, and you guys think what you want. They have the Black National Anthem, and I understand why they have that. And they have the National Anthem, and I understand why, you know, many people don't appreciate that because certain lyrics are very not great. Is it time maybe we just start rethinking the National Anthem? Maybe we update it, modernize it, make sure that it's relevant and impactful for everyone? You know what
or
I'm
like
saying?
Just switch it to America the Beautiful or God Bless America like they should have in the first place.
America the Beautiful. I don't think you should have God in there because
right.
Nothing against, I'm not saying anything against God, but there are many people who don't believe in God. So you're in a country where you're supposed to represent everyone equally, right? So shouldn't we have something that speaks to that across the board as a national anthem?
Especially when just you go know, back and
just a question.
I was watching, you know, not to do political commentary or whatever, but it is the anniversary of 9/11. And it was interesting to say that the people on Flight 93, there was a teacher on TikTok that talked about this and came to this realization that the people that were on Flight 93 saved the Capitol building that day.
They did. Yep.
And yet 20 years later, we literally had Americans attack the Capitol building. Mm-hmm. So really, when you think about it, Osama won.
Wow.
Yeah, I think I've offended enough people today, so I'm just going to remain silent.
Well, I was just saying, I'm not knocking anything. Whatever you think, that's your opinion. I don't care. I'm just saying, I feel like watching those games, we're at a point where maybe it's time we choose a different song. We've come a long way since that song was written. Maybe it's time to choose a different song. That's all I'm saying. Just food for thought. Wasn't going to have a huge debate because I don't want to offend like everybody. But when you're watching that and you're just like, I would rather we were all enjoying and feeling respectful and honoring the same thing, you know, across the board.
And be united.
Be united. Absolutely.
Once again.
That'd be crazy, though.
I know. It's in the title, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, first up is the movie Kate, which is on Netflix. Meticulous and paternally skilled. Kate is the perfect specimen of a finely tuned assassin. I didn't write this, Netflix did. It's a perfect specimen of a finely tuned assassin at the height of her game. But when she uncharacteristically blows an assignment targeting a member of the Yakuza in Tokyo, she quickly discovers she's been poisoned. A brutally slow execution that gives her less than 24 hours to exact revenge on her killers. Dennis Quaid, anywhere to be found in this movie?
No.
Side question. As her body swiftly deteriorates, Kate forms an unlikely bond with a teenage daughter of one of her past victims. John, you saw Kate. A lot of people aren't talking about this one or aren't talking about it positively, but you enjoyed this film overall. I'm just cutting to the chase. So
yeah.
Let's get to why you like it. So Mary Elizabeth Winstead, whom I've met, by the way, so be jealous.
Delightful
person. But she's the badass assassin. And if you caught her in Birds of Prey, you kind of know she's good at that sort of thing. How was she in the ass-kickery department?
She was great in the ass-kickery department in this. And you got to remember, this is also produced by one of the gentlemen from John Wick.
Of course. So all action movies are produced by somebody from John Wick now.
It does actually feel very much like John Wick, which means that it carries a lot of the same good and bad that John Wick has, where John Wick to me has a problem with pacing. This has a problem with pacing. But otherwise, watching Mary Elizabeth Winstead do this role was impressive and a lot of fun. And she was, the story talks about, or what Aaron just talked about, was the fact that she's poisoned and she fights like somebody who is poisoned. She doesn't fight like a unstoppable killing machine. She is having trouble the entire time, but still manages to survive by one mean or another as to what usually it's luck or a little bit of help from somebody else. But she gets through most of the movie to her end target. And it's fun. It's a good movie. I enjoyed it.
And she fits the bill as an ass kicker. Like, she's very fluid, very just brutal.
Oh yeah. She like,
it doesn't look choreographed. It doesn't look like she's sitting there on wire foo or anything. Like, it really looks like she's doing the damage.
Yeah, no, it looks like her. And at one point you're thinking, okay, I really hope that's makeup on her face, but if she really has that black eye, I buy it. I was very much in tune and paying attention to the action in this because there's been a lot of complaints. Some of it's the action, some of it's the acting, and I don't think any of that's fair to this because, again, if you're going to compare it to John Wick, it has all the same strengths and weaknesses, and I can't find anything, with the exception of John Wick is an unstoppable killing machine, whereas she is fallible, and it makes sense.
Woody Harrelson's in this movie, and I don't know exactly what his role is. It's not a spoiler, is it?
It's not a spoiler. He is he is her mentor. He
okay, that's what I was going to ask you. He's either the villain or the mentor, because he's Woody Harrelson. He's not going to be in there for nothing. But
right,
do you feel like, okay, he's not just popping up for 5 minutes and gone, right? Like, he has a substantial role.
No, he's his role is actually not as substantial as you'd think it would be, because there is a lot of, it's kind of hard to.
I understand. You got to dance around things. Is he good in it?
He is good in this. You believe that he is the character that he is. He is dashing, and he's all these things that Woody Harrelson can be. And he's personable. You really buy into him being a good guy. It's the usual Woody Harrelson character in every single way. Maybe two of them at the same time. But yeah, it's a good time.
All right. So $10 for full price of admission. What do you give Kate?
Kate gets a solid 6 out of me.
Really?
It was definitely worth the sit.
Okay. And I saw a small engine repair.
Yes, the event's been wildly out of control when three lifelong friends agree to do a favor on behalf of the brash young woman that they all adore. I mean, the way this read, Aaron, it seemed like it was basically The Hangover, but a really bad version of it.
No.
I don't know if you felt the same way or...
No, because I saw it. So I know that's not at all what the movie is. I don't know how you got that, honestly.
Well, it just seems like it's four guys just kicking back, drinking, stupid and stuff.
No, what it is it's about three longtime friends. They've been friends for 35 years, 40 years, whatever it is, their childhood friends. They've been friends since they were kids. And they have just a close bond. And they also all have a close bond with the lead character's daughter, because they've all been friends. They kind of grew up, they kind of helped raise her because her mom wasn't really around. The character of Frank and his daughter. Crystal is the daughter. Her mom wasn't around. So these guys kind of helped raise her. And then they have a fight early in the movie, which leads to them kind of splitting apart. And then they all come back together several months later with Frank. And Frank very much... There's more going on that you don't find out until later in the film, like why he wants to bring them back together. But a lot of it has to do with their friendship and his daughter and, you know, things get intriguing, to say the least. But definitely not like The Hangover. There is a lot of dark humor. There's a lot of fun humor. There really is the bond of friends involved here and how close they can be and how they consider his daughter family, because, you know, to them, they're all family. Even if they had a split and they were on the outs, they still love each other very much and they'll do anything for each other.
Now, some people are saying that this isn't good. And there's other people that are like, oh my God, best movie ever, because this was based on a play, if I remember correctly.
Correct.
And that it just seems like that they're only acting within the play space versus like making it feel like a theatrical movie. Did you feel that way at all?
Yeah, it's very much like most of the film is in one setting. Most of the film takes place in one setting. I mean, it's written and directed by John Polano, who did the play with John Bernthal, and they're both in the movie as well. And fun fact, John Polano, because he has a beard the whole movie, and he just sounds, his cadence and everything else sounds just like Vince Vaughn. For the first like 20 minutes, I thought it was Vince Vaughn and just he wasn't credited. Mm. True story. But no, they did the play. Now they're doing the movie. It's very much taking place for the most part in one location at Frank's garage, his small engine repair garage, with him, John Bernthal as Terrence, and then Shea Whigham as the third friend who plays Packy. And he's great, as he always is. I mean, he's really playing against type, honestly, in this one, because he's kind of weird, odd. He's the odd bird. You know, everybody that has like close childhood friends, there's always one that was kind of like on the outs, the weird one that you took in because you wanted to protect him or you cared about him for whatever reason. You knew him a little better, but everybody kind of picked on him, and you know, he's that guy. Great.
You feel it?
Friend
was,
drama.
Can you compare it to like No Country or No Man of God? And we had like a single room setting with two characters. And then you compare this to like a single room setting with these characters. Do you think the characters are enough to make you interested in the production?
Yeah, they're strong characters, and as you go and you find out what the underlying issue is, there's an underlying problem that Frank wants to address with his friends. Once you learn what that is, then you see them make choices as friends, and you really kind of. The friendship plays through, and it's all about the acting. The actors know their roles and their dynamic in that respect, I think very much it works. I don't think it's as powerful as it could have been. The story is powerful. What's happening is powerful. I just think the resolution is probably not as powerful as I would have liked. But overall, it's still, yes, I wasn't bored once. It carried my interest. It was paced well.
Well, overall, if $10 was the full price of admission, what would you give Small Engine Repair?
$6.50. A nice, small character drama that is available only in theaters. And it's one of those where I say, you got to go see movies like this or you're not going to see them in theaters again. You know, I mean, they're a dying breed. It was a really engaging character piece with very important aspects that I recommend you don't watch the trailer. Or at least what I was telling people is watch the trailer for 1 minute and then turn it off. Because the longer the trailer goes, the closer it gets to telling you more of what's happening. And I think it's more impactful if you don't know what's going to happen.
Fair enough.
Yep. There you go. Okay. Now, Troy, I'm going to give you the option because I know you got to go anyway. Do you want to say your goodbyes now? Because we're going to talk about Malignant and there's a good chance we're going to talk about spoilers at some point.
Well, then, yeah, maybe I should say goodbye now then.
Okay.
Because I kind of want to see it and I have not seen it yet.
Okay. Then, because we are, I can almost guarantee it, going to talk about some spoilers. So just say anything you want to say goodbye.
Well, thanks for having me again. I know I love doing the TV stuff and I hope you guys can watch 500 shows this fall. Like Aaron said, you can find me at The Blacklist Exposed with Aaron because he's coming back for season 9.
I'm pretty sad.
Who knew? That's a big surprise. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Uh-huh.
It will be definitely a shorter and more condensed podcast this year, I think.
It will be if I'm going to be there.
It's going to be great.
You're not going to fight over the same thing over and over and over again?
No, we're going to fight over new things.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So hopefully we'll see what happens. But yeah, we'll see you guys next week.
We're moving on to our last movie of the evening that we're going to review. It is Malignant. Aaron and I actually both sat down and watched this. Available in theater and on HBO Max. The story of this is Madison is paralyzed by shocking visions of grisly murders, and her torment worsens as she discovers that these waking dreams are actually real. It stars Annabelle Wallace, Madison Hassan, George Young, and it is directed by James Wan. Aaron, what did you expect when you were going into this movie?
Okay, so I'm gonna go ahead and just say, like, we're gonna get into spoilers here because I think it's impossible to talk about this movie without. But I will just do your score so anybody listening that wants to know what you thought of it knows.
All right, my score is $6.
Okay, I'm gonna go $5.50. It's hard for me to give it a clear 3 stars, but there's a lot that I think is interesting in here, and I think some people will probably love it.
Yeah,
but
I actually love it for $6. I mean, this kind of movie getting $6 for me means I love it because when I was going into it, I immediately felt like something like Dr. Giggles, or it felt like something that was very grindhousey or Argento or some one of those old school horror flicks right away. What about you?
Sure. I mean, like I said, $5.50. It just the acting, even when it's trying to be campy, is kind of bad. I don't think much of it is very good, but there's so many cool ideas. The murders are fantastic. Like if you're a guy that watches horror movies for the kills, you're going to be ecstatic. There's nods to the 80s. There's nods to Basket Case. There's nods to Dario Argento. I mean, there's a lot of horror love in this movie. There's Easter eggs all over the place. It feels like James Wan decided he's going to make a movie that pays homage to everything he loves, and he doesn't give a rat's ass what anybody thinks about it. That's what I got out of it. That said, spoilers. So we're talking spoilers. So if you haven't seen it and you're worried about that, I would recommend stopping. But because I'm just going to get into it. So Malignant, what did I think about the movie? What the hell is going on, man? Like 2/3 of the movie just aren't good except for the kills. And then the last third happens and I knew what was coming. I knew.
Oh, yeah.
Freaking knew exactly where it was going. Just because they made too many, got to cut the cancer out of me. The movie's called Malignant. They show the little stupid V baby at the beginning. I just knew there was something. I knew it was like a twin brother that was cut out of her. I didn't think it was like that.
Right.
I didn't think it was like that. I thought it was more like mind manipulation or something like that. But my God, then in that last third happens and I'm like, is she running around backwards? With her head, oh, like that's what's happening, and then it just went.
Yeah,
okay, I guess you're either in or you're out at this point.
Yeah, for me, the first time I saw the killer running or moving, period, I got what was going on. And
did you really?
I thought that.
No, don't. No, yes, bullshit. You really, really said, I know what's happening right here.
Yeah, no bullshit. I knew exactly what it was because of the way the body was moving. It was moving in a very specific way that would only work if you're moving backwards. And I picked up on it right away. And when little things like the way he held the knife or the way he put on the coat and the way his whole like shoulders and body and the whole running looked great. Like whenever that, you know, what was his name? It doesn't matter. Backwards
Damien?
Running guy.
Damien.
Yeah. Something like that. It's with a G. Anyhow,
Gabriel.
Gabriel, that's
who's
it.
The devil.
So whenever
the devil, yes. What was he known as? The devil. Oh my God! Shut the hell up. What? Anyway.
So when Gabriel was in control, it was obvious. You're looking at some. To me, you're looking at somebody who's running really animatedly backwards, and every movement looked like it was really animated backwards, and it was very cool to me to see that, and that's how I picked up on it, because I'm an artist. I pick up on how the body moves, and I'm supposed to pay attention to stuff like that, and I was paying attention to it here, so yeah, that's why I picked up on it so quickly.
Now, two-thirds of the movie in, do you actually like the movie? Because here's what I've seen, okay? Everywhere I've looked, I didn't know what I thought for the first two-thirds, but then that last third it kicked in, and I was all in. I was on board. Woohoo, this is great. Nobody I know that watched just, like, because I knew a few people that cut it off, like, halfway, they thought it was just stupid. But if you finished it, it kind of goes from stupid to kick ass real quick. Where were you at?
As soon as the movie started, and I got it in my head that I was looking at something that was paying homage to Grindhouse or paying homage to the movies of the 80s and 90s that were, Dr. Giggles. As soon as I got that in my head, I was in, and I was okay.
Really?
Yeah.
That's fascinating to me.
I told the same thing to a friend of mine who wanted to know if they thought they should watch it. And I said, you should watch it. Your girlfriend should not watch it. And she sent me a message the next day saying that the movie was stupid. And I go, yeah, that's the whole point.
I mean, I feel like you got to get that at least 15 minutes in, right?
Right.
It's a funny story now. It wasn't really that funny. It just kind of sounds sad at the time. But I've got a friend in Australia who actually cuts trailers for movies. That's what he does. He cuts trailers. So a lot of times he'll see movies early. Like, you know, last year he saw Halloween Long before that came out because he was cutting the trailer for it and everything. So he's, you know, he has to cut some trailers for movies, and he had to cut Malignant. He's one of the ones that was involved. And he just cut the trailer. I think he only saw the trailer. He didn't get to see the whole movie. And he thought it looked horrible. He's like, one of the worst trailers I've ever seen. This movie's going to be garbage, da 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 da. And then I didn't watch the trailer until afterward. And I agree. It looks bad. There's nothing in the trailer that does a very good job of selling the movie. I got to be honest about that.
No, not at all. Yeah.
But when you watch it, 10 minutes in, it's painfully obvious that's the tone he's going for. He starts it very clearly, like over the top, overacted, just, you know, in the ridiculous baby in the back with the guts everywhere and everybody freaking out. I mean, it just... we got to cut out the cancer and just all of this cheesy shit. Nothing there should have done anything but tell you that's the kind of movie you're going to get for the next hour mm-hmm. and whatever change.
When I send it out to friends, I'm like, if you like Grindhouse and if you like the stupid movies in the 80s and 90s that always had some sort of theme that designed to scare you, you're going to enjoy this.
That said, I still think the acting's not great, even for a campy one. Because when people are trying to force camp, I don't know if it always plays.
It does kind of falter on that a little bit. Annabelle Wallace was enjoyable, but the rest of the cast was like George Young. I wish there was a little bit more out of him.
George Young, who's playing the cop, he's playing Shaw, one of the cops.
Yeah.
When a killer moves that fast, which by the way makes no sense now that you know what you know, makes no right. damn sense how fast this get real moves, but stop, let him get away at some point. It felt like they were going for that whole Seven vibe where the cop keeps going until he can't go anymore, da, 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 da. And I get that,
right?
But it makes no sense. Like, let him go, just stop it. Now you're following him into an empty, you were literally, you could be going into the killer's cave. Why are you being this stupid? You're a cop. Be smarter. Idiot.
That's pretty funny. I like that. Stop. Just stop.
And also, I mean, how many bullets, if you hit her on the backside, do bullets not go through because of the tough shell? What the hell? I don't understand. That Gabriel / Madison got shot like 15 times.
I only remember her getting shot once.
Well, I got shot a couple times. Got shot in when the cop was chasing him, her, whatever her pronoun is.
I think it's officially okay, they.
They got shot several times down, or a couple times down there, and then they got shot in that police station at least once or twice.
Yeah, I only remember one shot.
They apparently have bulletproof capes. I don't
know. But hey, if you're going to wear a cape, it better be bulletproof.
So what do you think about the final act, like the last 30 minutes of the movie, where everything comes to... Oh, wait, one more thing. Sydney? Was Sydney her sister's name, right? Was it Sydney?
Yeah, Sydney is her sister's name. Yeah.
You are stupid. Why do you go to a psychiatric facility in the middle of nowhere and only snoop around in the dark during a thunderstorm? It's like, it just feels like that's the worst possible time you could be snooping around in a place like that. You couldn't wait for daytime?
When she drove up to the place, and her initial reaction to when she drove up to the place is what any normal person's reaction would be like, oh my God. Because that place looked like a freaking castle.
Because it was.
Yeah.
It was a castle. Yeah.
It was a haunted mansion. She's crapping herself just looking at it. And it was perfect. The fact that she went in, I don't buy, but it was perfect.
All right. So the final half hour has the reveal. And by the way, stellar cameo from Zoe Bell, if you didn't catch it. Stunt woman from Quentin Tarantino movies. She's actually in the prison scene. She's the blonde lady who starts the tiff. That's Zoe Bell.
Oh, yeah, right.
Fun little cameo.
Somehow I did not realize that was
her. I literally just rewatched Grindhouse and Death Proof, so I just saw her. So it was pretty. But I've also interviewed her. Actually, sort through the podcast. Go find the interview. I interviewed Zoe Bell. The reveal that this baby is attached to the back of her head, it's a conjoined twin, and they cut out the meat or the bones, but apparently they couldn't take the brain. So now Gabriel has been controlling her life and apparently can affect her memories. So she's actually there when the killings are happening. Let's just forget about the fact that she's seen him plain as day, even though her face would be going the other way, but I guess she can see through his eyes. You can make that work. Sure. Whatever. What did you think about this reveal?
Well, again, I wasn't surprised by it. I was just at some point I was like hitting my watch going, come on, let's have the reveal now. It's tough, man. I now that you asked me about it, I said it in the way you did. I'm like, maybe I shouldn't like it, but
it's a dumb reveal. But you got to admit the set piece was pretty fantastic.
Oh, absolutely. The whole seeing the maquette function on the back of the alien baby and everything, like that whole thing was awesome, being able to see that in full flesh. And then the whole, it pushes itself out of the back of her skull because her, you know, her skull was cracked open by her husband. Come on.
That's so dumb. That was just so dumb. I'm like, so the whole time we're seeing the killer, like he just pushes her face away because her face, the back of that killer's head is never really covered that I saw in any of the scenes. So did the hair just fly
over?
It's
just the hair's all combed in a way that it covers up her face. And then it has, it's a high brimmed or high, like, it's an Ivernus coat. So the Ivernus coat with the collar flipped up is pretty tall.
Sure. I get that. That would cover. But going to the police station, same thing, wearing the same coat or whatever. And now you see part of her face, which that was just a weird visual.
It really was.
Them run around with her, like, piece of her face poking out. I was just like, what the frack is going on? And this, but then she took out a whole police station, and I was like, all right, that's kind of cool. That's like a badass.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah, we'll give it to him. Like, the way she kicked everyone's ass was perfect. Yeah.
Just beat the shit out of everybody. And then got to the hospital, and then did fool me. I honestly was fooled. But actually, I'm kind of mad that I was fooled. I was pretty stoked that they shot the sister. I'm like, that's ballsy. I never saw that coming. And then you retconned it basically. And I'm like, God damn it, man. I was all on board with you guys. You ruined this for me.
I was all on board for them killing the sister.
I was. I thought that was cool. I like when things are unexpected. A horror movie shouldn't make you feel good at the end. You know, I don't want to walk out smiling. I want to walk out like thrilled. And that was the coolest moment because it was the only real surprise in the movie. Like, I kind of saw everything else coming. They kind of telegraphed a lot of it. But her getting killed, I totally never saw that happening.
No, it was a shock. So I'm with you. The whole was it Dallas? The ending of it.
Yeah, and mom falling out of the attic was pretty cool. That was a surprise. That I did not see coming.
Yeah, I didn't see that being her mom. Like that was a complete shock. Although I did like the whole time. I'm like, is that the girl or is that somebody else? Like
she did look alike.
The casting was really good.
But no, I'm saying I didn't see her falling through the attic. I didn't think she was in the attic. I'm like, well, that I didn't see coming. That was interesting.
I actually was buying into the fact that they were still in that the underground San Francisco or whatever, underground Seattle.
Sure.
Because it looked a lot like the same stuff, like the giant spinning fan that's there for no good reason. Like that looked like the part of the underground Seattle.
I got a lot of vibes from The Crow, a lot of aesthetics from The Crow. Just the way the look, the way it was shot, the ass kicking in the police station, just all very much seemed like The Crow in a lot of ways.
Yeah. No, this is definitely James Wan just turning around and saying, hey, I'm going to have fun. We've had a shitty time. Let's just have fun. James Wan's going to say, James Wan it. That's it.
Yeah. If you are a fan, you want your horror movies serious, this is not a movie for you. It's just not.
If you need it to make sense, this is not a movie,
for you. That was the great thing about the 80s, man. They were just going for wacky concepts. I mean, Basket Case, which to me feels like this is pulling from quite a bit, or at least in thematic material, where guy had a hunchback on him the whole time. It's a stupid movie, but it's really interesting to watch. Like, I really like that movie. I don't know why. And the 80s did a lot of stuff like that.
Yeah, Shocker.
Oh, my God. That one's another one. That was a good movie. Wes Craven, right? That was a Wes Craven movie.
Yeah, it was.
Ladies had a lot of them. A lot of high concepts, didn't make any sense, still went a little campy, but somehow still fun. People Under the Stairs, another Wes Craven movie.
Oh, my God, yeah.
There's a lot of that stuff. And monster creature features were big in the early 80s, like huge, huge, because they were cheap to make, and, you know, they could make $12 and go on.
They didn't have to pay too much attention to something called the script.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, would you want to see another one if they... If this was successful, if they made another Malignant?
I don't want to see another Malignant. I do want to see James Wan do more stuff like this, though. Pay more homage to the 80s and 90s.
He is a really talented director.
He really is. This is, you know, his ability of playing with horror the way he does is just, you don't see that very much. Even the greatest director of all time or this generation doesn't play with horror as much this well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's not nearly as fun when Amanda's not here.
Well, because I didn't know who you were talking about. If Amanda was here, I would know you meant Jordan Peele.
Right.
I didn't know that because she's not present. So, nice shot.
Right. Right. That's what I already called myself out for screwing that joke up.
Also, one of the goriest movies I've seen in a long time, which is always fun. I mean, there's had to be gallons of blood throughout this thing. Just guts and necks severed and, man...
Heads going one way, body going another way, you know.
Yep.
Cats and dogs living together.
Mass hysteria.
Mayhem.
Okay, well, that's Malignant. I got nothing more to talk about. We're done. We'll be back next week with something else. Please remember that the next time you go to a theater, buy popcorn. Unless there's something else you wanted to add.
No, I'm good.
Okay, then buy popcorn.
Maybe throw some Reese's Pieces in there.
I do like chocolate and popcorn. Chocolate peanut butter and popcorn?
Oh, yeah.
Is that good? Why did you sound like a...
Yeah.
Like you should be on a sex offender list. I don't...
Because I'm easily aroused lately.
Okay, then. And stop it.